Hi, it's Jeremy Hobson from The Middle. I'm coming to the Palace Theater in Waterbury Monday, June 3rd for a national taping of my show. Former White House climate advisor Gina McCarthy and NBC Connecticut chief meteorologist Ryan Hanrahan will be there to talk about getting the politics out of climate change. Get your tickets at ctpublic.org/the middle.
Sponsored locally by Connecticut Green Bank, Eversource Energy, and the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Old family photographs are treasured heirlooms. We look back at them and see similarities in our faces, our children's faces. We wonder how a distant relative lived his or her life. But there are many African Americans who don't have photos of their relatives, relatives who were enslaved. Tamara Lanier believes she has seen photographs of her great-great-great-grandfather, Renty, and his daughter, Delia. But their images are held by Harvard University's Peabody Museum. Tamara says they belong to her. In 2019, she sued Harvard for wrongful seizure, possession, and expropriation of the old photographs taken in 1850, during a time when there were nearly 4 million enslaved people living in this country. Today, Where We Live, we hear how Lanier traced her family roots to Renty and Delia, and why she thinks Harvard should give those photographs to her family. You can join our conversation. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Coming up, we're also going to hear how Tamara's story exposes the legacy many universities have to slavery. I want to welcome Tamara Lanier again to our studio. She lives in Norwich, Connecticut. Tamara, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start with how you connected your family history to these two people who were enslaved in 1850 in South Carolina. I understand that you first heard about them through your late mother. What did she tell you growing up?
Well, my mother was a retired teacher, and throughout my childhood and also the childhood of my children, my mom talked about her ancestry. And the discussions would always start with the black African who was fondly referred to as Papa Rindy. And my mom spoke of her enslaved ancestors with a pride and with a reverence. She would talk about the fact that Papa Rindy could read, that he taught himself to read, that he taught himself to read using a book called the Blueback Webster. It was Noah Webster's speller, and that he would teach others to read. That he would read to people from the Bible, and that he was this community-type person that everyone respected.
So your mother, she was the child of sharecroppers?
My mother was born in Montgomery, Alabama. Yes, she was born to parents who sharecropped. But also with her family was her grandfather, who was also named Renty. And my mom would talk about Renty Taylor Thompson, who she referred to as Papa. But she would talk about the fact that he was also born a slave. And again, when she talked about her enslaved ancestors, it was always with a pride and with a respect and with a reverence. And, you know, it was clear to me that the children of slaves were not ashamed of their ancestor servitude, particularly in my family. That was certainly the case.
So the story of Renty and Delia, the story that your mother heard from her parents, again, oral history passed down through the generations, when she was close to passing. What did your mother tell you about your family story?
Yeah. Well, my mother, again, all throughout my childhood, she shared these stories of who Papa Renty was. And she had a desire to document the story herself, though she never got around to doing that. But when she became, she was inflicted with a number of life-threatening diseases. But towards the end of her life, it became important to her that I document the story of who my ancestors were. My mother had a cousin who had documented her family tree back to Africa on her maternal side. And it was always her desire to document her family tree back on her paternal side to Africa, starting with Papa Rinty. And so she always talked about doing that. She never got around to doing it. But towards the end of her life, you know, the things that she would say was, write this down. Write this down. Always remember. She would say things like, always remember we're Taylors, not Thompsons. And so
And the Taylors were the name of the original slaveholding family?
Yes. The Taylors were she was referring to, although she didn't know at that time, she only knew that we were Taylors. But when I started on the journey of doing the research, I found my family on Benjamin Franklin Taylor's in his will. And so I knew that that was the Taylor connection. Which is so important because when you think about slavery and the destruction of the family, families were broken up and separated, and you didn't know where your children went. You didn't know who they were then owned by. So if you didn't have the oral history and the fortunate ability to trace back knowing what new surnames they took on, it's impossible to do the research.
And so how did you embark on, tracing these roots? So you had the oral history and mm-hmm. you wrote it down.
Yes.
This was probably before Ancestry.com became super popular. Mm. And so can you briefly just tell me a little bit about, you know, where you started and yes. who did you seek out for help?
Well, it's an amazing story. One of the things that, it wasn't my intention. I've never written a book before, and I certainly didn't know how to do the genealogy in 2010 and 2011, and the internet then wasn't what it is today. But after my mom's passing, I had a guilt because we would only talk about these things because it was something she enjoyed talking about it, and we kind of used that discussion about Papa Rinty as a distraction to make her happy, make her feel better, and to take her mind from, the concerns about her health. But I never really had an intention originally of writing anything or documenting this. But after she passed, I had such guilt about it that I had made this promise to her, and it was so very important. I knew that I had to write this down, and I had to create this small little family tree, the genealogy project that she wanted me to do, but I had no clue. And one afternoon, I was out walking for lunch, and I stopped by a local ice cream shop, and I'm talking with the owner, a person that we, I didn't know him personally. We just exchanged the normal pleasantries when I would buy my lunch and make small conversation. But I shared with him that day that my mom had passed and that I had made this promise to her to do this genealogy project that I didn't understand how to do. And this was an elderly gentleman, and he said, "I love to do that kind of research. Write down what you know, and I'll take a shot at it." And so I gave him exactly, the names that my mom had given me. I started with Papa Rinty. I gave him everything I knew about his children, his wife, not Papa Rinty's wife, but my mom's grandfather Rinty's wife, Ophelia. And I shared with him the fact about, Rinty was African-born. And I left with my salad, and I didn't go right back. And shortly, maybe about 6 or so weeks later, I stop in, and he's like, "Where have you been?" Mm-hmm. "I found your grandfather on the internet." And I'm like, "Yeah, right." And again, I'm the first thing I thought was, how could my enslaved ancestors, how can an image of my enslaved ancestors be on the internet? And, how could that be? So at that point, we exchanged names and contact information and email addresses. And he said, "I'll send you what I found." And he did. That evening when I got home, I opened up a document that he had created, which was a very comprehensive document about the lineage, but also about Louis Agassiz. So I was learning.
This was the Harvard professor, Louis Agassiz.
Yes, Louis Agassiz, mm-hmm. his scientific racism theories, the theories that blacks were a separate species. Mm-hmm. So I read that and I was just like horrified. terrified.
Can I ask, how did he connect you with photographs that were commissioned by this Harvard professor, Louis Agassiz, in 1850? You said that he connected you. Was it he believed your great-great-great-grandfather that was photographed for Louis Agassiz?
Yes. So it's all documented in the census. The census will pretty much take you back to my great-grandfather, which was Rinty Taylor Thompson. And his father was Rinty. But the census shows a direct lineage. And so he, based on the information, and I think the linchpin was the fact that I mentioned that Rinty was African. And so he put it together that evening when I opened the pictures. I read the narrative first, and when I opened the pictures, I was just like spellbound because, you know, when I looked at that image, I knew immediately that this was the man that I had heard so much about for most of my life.
So we have images of Rinty and Delia on our website, WNPR.org/where we live. But since we're on the radio, Tamara, you have a picture of Rinty, who you believe through this research, through the census, probate documents, wills, that this individual photographed in 1850 is your great-great-great-grandfather. Describe the first time when you saw his face. Can you describe what you felt and describe to our listeners how he looks to you?
Well, it was really a surreal moment because, firstly, you know, we connected in terms of the eyes. I looked at him and I looked in his eyes and I felt like he was staring back at me, that he was speaking to me. I saw a resemblance. I saw a family resemblance in his eyes. And I saw the kind of pride that my mom spoke about in terms of who he was, the kind of also stubbornness I've seen in my uncles and other members of my family. There was so much about the image that spoke to me. And then, you know, because I had read the narrative of how the images came to be, I was like, you know, there was this moment of like conflict because I was so excited to see an image of the man that I'd heard so much about. And then I thought about how my mother would feel. This was a man that she revered, that she loved, that she respected. She had never seen him. She had only heard so much about him and us through stories. And then how would she feel knowing how the images came to be and how her beloved Papa Rinty was exploited. So I knew that she would be hurt. And so I thought about that often. I think about the even today and regularly. Would she have been happy to see them or would she rather have not?
I want to remind our listeners who they're hearing on the radio. Tamara Lanier is a Norwich resident. She believes she's the descendant of Rinty and Delia, two enslaved people whose images were commissioned by Harvard professor Louis Agassiz in 1850. Tamara, one of the reasons we invited you here today is because you have sued Harvard. You filed a lawsuit in March of 2019 saying that these photos belong to your family. Harvard does not believe that these photos belong to you. Why do you want these photos back?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Initially, I wanted to sit down with Harvard and have a conversation because Harvard and many others were using the image as a backdrop to the scientific racist theory of Louis Agassiz.
A pseudoscience.
And what Agassiz was saying, and the reason why he took the images, is he wanted ocular proof that black people were physically different, not only different, but a different species and subhuman. And that Agassiz also was quoted to say that black people had the intellectual capabilities of a 7-month-old fetus in the mother's womb. So originally when I approached Harvard, I was like, tell the true story of who Rinty was. And Rinty, just by virtue of his literacy and what he was able to do, disputes Agrasis's science and turns it on his head, because Agrasis is saying that they're subhuman, but these slaves miraculously, even when it was illegal, for under threat of they could be killed for learning to read, these people, his subjects, disputed his scientific narrative. So my original position for Harvard was tell the true story of who these people were. Don't leave it, you know, we can't leave it unaddressed, the fact that Agrasis's subjects negated his science. And for whatever reason, I could not get Harvard to take an interest in Rinty's legacy and who he was.
We should mention that these old photographs known as daguerreotypes, yes, were discovered by a Harvard employee in the 1970s. It made news because it was believed that these were some of the earliest photographs of enslaved people in the United States. We reached out to Harvard University in a statement. This is just part of the statement. Harvard writes, it acknowledges the university has a complicated history with slavery in America and is committed to continuing to explore these past connections. Most recently, in November of last year, the Harvard president announced a new university-wide initiative on Harvard and the legacy of slavery. Harvard also says it's committed to greater public access to these old photographs of Rinty and Delia and is open to exploring whether an institution with a collection that has a greater focus on African-American history and culture would be interested in a long-term loan of the daguerreotypes. They also dispute your claim that it has profited from these images. Just to clarify for our listeners, you believe through all this research that Rinty and Delia, photographed in 1850, are your relatives, that these photographs belong to your family. But what do you think of the argument that these photographs, when we talk about ownership, that they, maybe descendants of the original photographer, could claim that these are their photographs, or a descendants of the original slaveholding family could say that these are their photographs? Why do you believe these photographs belong to you?
Okay. Well, I think we have to, again, thinking in terms of when these photographs were taken in the 1850s, look at the subjects, Rinty, Delia, and the other slaves that were photographed. They didn't volunteer to take these pictures. And Delia's picture, there's a book written, Delia's Tear, because if you look at the daguerreotypes, you see a tear welling in her eyes that she's crying during this experience or this ordeal. And so I liken the taking of these images kind of like the fruits of force, meaning that their images were stolen from them because they did this under duress, almost as if someone's put a gun to their head and say, you pose and take these images or there will be consequences because of the threat of slavery. So they weren't willing subjects. These photographs weren't taken with their permission. They weren't consenting to any use of their images. So these are the fruits of violence. And it would be saying that Harvard or the photographer should have a right to these images would be saying like a perpetrator of a robbery has a right to those proceeds. And not only do they have that right, but then they have the right to go on and taunt the victim through perpetuity. And so there's something unjust about that. There's something morally wrong about that. And I believe that we have a great legal argument as well. And so it's again, when we talk about the arc of morality, bending towards justice here, slavery and what they were forced to do should have some impact on the moral question as to whether or not Harvard should own them. Beyond that, Harvard's actions, they say that they haven't profited. Harvard, and that the images are in the public domain or they want to have them, that's only because they're motivated now because of the lawsuit. The fact that they're not profiting, again, is because they're motivated because of the lawsuit. People have talked about paying expensive one-time usage fees signing copyright contracts. Harvard doesn't have a good title on the images. The copyright contracts that they've had people sign aren't legitimate. So there's a lot, you know, there are a lot of legal things that certainly I would prefer the attorneys talk about. But I know that there is Harvard has never come to the table in good faith to have a discussion about the images.
Again, my in-studio guest is Tamara Lanier, a Norwich, Connecticut resident who believes she's a descendant of Renty and Delia, enslaved people whose images were commissioned by Harvard professor Louis Agassiz in 1850. Again, if you go to our website, wmpr.org/where we live, you can see these images for yourself. Lanier is currently suing Harvard for possession of those images. She wants those photos in her family. Coming up, we hear from a descendant of this Harvard professor who commissioned the photographs of Renty and Delia. Do you think Harvard should relinquish the photos to Lanier's family? You can join our conversation. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. My guest today is Tamara Lanier, a Norwich, Connecticut resident who has sued Harvard University. Harvard University's Peabody Museum has what is believed to be the earliest images of enslaved Africans in the United States that were taken in 1850 for Harvard professor Louis Agassiz. He commissioned a photographer to capture the images of enslaved people in South Carolina. Now, Agassiz used these images to justify his racial theory that blacks were a different species to whites, making them inferior, a scientifically disproven white supremacist idea that theorists at the time used to justify slavery. Through time-consuming research, Tamara believes she's related to two of the people photographed for Harvard professor Louis Agassiz. Their names were Renty and Delia. You can see their images on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Now, Tamara's journey to connect herself to them has taken her to South Carolina, where she met the family, descendants of the original slaveholder of Renty and Delia. She's also connected with the family of Harvard professor Louis Agassiz. One of them joins us now via Zoom. Her name is Marion Moore. She is the great-great-great-granddaughter of Louis Agassiz. Marion, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we don't have a lot of time, but briefly, tell us what growing up, what did you know about your ancestor, again, Harvard professor Louis Agassiz?
Okay, first I would love to just acknowledge that when you speak of Tammy, you say she believes she is the descendant, and you speak of me, you say I am the descendant. So I'd like to just say that Tammy Lanier is the descendant of Papa Renty. And so I found out about, we grew up knowing that our ancestor had discovered that glaciers moved, and that was a point of pride in the family. And we didn't know until probably the 80s, I sort of heard some rumors, maybe from a sibling, that he also had what I filed away as problematic views about race, but I never did the research. And it was Tammy, whose lawsuit I read about in the New York Times and saw my ancestor's name connected to that. And it was really disturbing. But I made a decision in that moment that I was not going to hide my head under the covers. And I was going to walk toward, open that door that could bring Tammy and me together and my family together to change the story so that we're not, you know, trying to other each other, but come to a sense of belonging.
So tell me how you decided to reach out to Tamara Lanier, given, again, your great-great-great-grandfather, Louis Agassiz's, you know, racist beliefs. And again, tell me a little bit more about why you wanted to take that step to reach out to her.
Well, you know, I'm a racial justice activist in my life and in my work. And so, and we were raised as, you know, my parents were very engaged in civil rights. And here, this was on a personal level. And I know that, it's easy to sort of ignore the things that you don't want to hear about the, you know, the ancestors whom you sort of were proud of. And I also knew that I could possibly be a part of a story that could be a part of a healing of this separation that, you know, that my ancestors' beliefs helped to propagate, this notion that we are separate. And so it, I mean, and it felt, as Tammy can attest to me, it was as though there was, this was something, Lucy, that wanted to happen, because it was just almost, what I did is I wrote a Facebook message to Tammy and didn't hear from her for a while, but then I talked to my nephew and my son, both of whom center racial justice in their work, and my nephew suggested that we write an open letter to Harvard. And I think my family members were really felt like super grateful to be able to take a stand that would, you know, try to undo part of what Louis Agassiz tried to, you know, did.
So you mentioned this open letter. So it's not just you and a couple members of your family. There are many members of your family that have signed on to this open letter to Harvard University saying that your family supports Tammy's claim to these photographs of Renty and Delia. I just wanted to read part of that letter. Quote, "For Harvard to give the daguerreotypes to Ms. Lanier and her family would begin to make amends for its use of the photos as exhibits for the white supremacist theory Agassiz espoused. It is time for Harvard to recognize Renty and Delia as people." How did Harvard University respond to that letter?
You know, we never got any response, they didn't respond. But we made our point, and we got press coverage. And one of the things that I noticed, and, you know, I posted that letter on my own Facebook page and my own statement that I got to make at the press conference last June. And I was so interested how many of my, you know, my white Facebook friends were so, so not just supportive, but they were like, I wish I, you know, could take a stand like that. They saw that as an opportunity, this personal family story, to be able to step into, you know, a new way of being, and that Harvard is avoiding. You know, Harvard is wanting to control the narrative and stay in this old story of, you know, supporting Louis Agassiz. And they say they're working toward, you know, trying to use the photographs. But do you notice that that all is on their terms? And we think that it should be on Tammy's terms and on the descendants' terms.
You're hearing Marion Moore joining us via Zoom, the great-great-great-granddaughter of Louis Agassiz, this Harvard professor who commissioned images of Renty and Delia. Moore and 42 members of her family wrote an open letter to Harvard in support of Norwich, Connecticut resident Tamara Lanier's, again, claims to these photos. Tammy, I wanted to go back to you. Is it all right if I call you
yes,
Tammy?
Yes, please.
I wanted to go back to you to respond to what it was like to get a Facebook message from this woman you didn't know, that wants to reconcile, acknowledge her distant relative's racist theory, as well as wanting to apologize to you. I'm just wondering if you could walk through what it was like to read that message.
Well, I want to first thank Miriam. I mean, she's such a phenomenal person, and I'm so blessed to have connected with her and to have met her. You know, originally I looked for Agassiz descendants. I was kind of apprehensive because I was afraid that his toxic racism might have poisoned his children in that they might have thought like he did. So I was afraid if I found them what that experience would be like. So I think I found their grandmother and stopped at that point. But when I got the Facebook message, it was after a news story, I think it was the New York Times. And then, and unfortunately, every time there's a news story, I get an overwhelmingly response of positive messages, encouraging messages, and there is that percentage of the hate messages. And so my social media pages were overwhelmed. And so I had to go through so many and delete so many. And then, is this a good message or a bad message? And I would do it in moderation. I would do a review some messages, and then I would put it aside, and then I would come back later. And when I got to Marin's message, I wasn't sure if I should open it. I wasn't sure that it was an actual message from a family member. And so when I decided to read it, there was something that rang true about her message, something that connected with me, and I said, I'm going to reach out. And when I did, surprisingly, I found that, you know, when she talks about a social justice activist, I describe them as some of the most woke people that I've ever met. They've lived a life of building people up and giving back, and just amazing people. From that moment, from that first phone call till today, we've been like sisters. So, you know, I see them as a part of my family.
Marian Moore says that Harvard University did not respond to her family's letter to them. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I'm not surprised they don't respond to me either. But again, it, you know, what Miriam speaks about is so important because she has lended, you know, a perspective from Louis Agassiz, so to speak, because Harvard has in the past been very defensive of Louis Agassiz. They've denied people use of the images because they question what they would say about Louis Agassiz. So from Harvard to hear from so many members of his family, compelling them or asking them to do the right thing and then to ignore it kind of speaks to the kind of character of what we're dealing with in terms of resisting to come to the table and have an honest discussion about what we're really striving to do.
In your research connecting you to Renty and Delia, it would be fair to say there are probably many other descendants of Renty and Delia. Have you found them? And again, why do you believe you should get these photographs and not them?
Okay. Well, one of the things that, you know, I don't want to say it troubles me, but I know just as my mother heard these stories, so did other people. And I think, you know, this is a purpose-driven story because you have an African slave who, from the 1800s, told his children about who he was and to never forget. And each one of those generations told their children, as my mother told me. What's unique about my experience is I documented it. I recorded my mom talking. And then I pursued the story. And when I say pursued the story, I'm talking about traveling all over the country, all over the world, Switzerland and other places, to document the story. So, and I understand that because of my efforts, that doesn't give me any more of a kinship to Papa Renty. But I believe, in a sense, that that this was, when I say purpose-driven, that I was chosen to do this. The things that my mother remembered were the things that helped me bridge the challenges of tracing genealogy for Afro-Americans. But for that, the story would not be revealed. My genealogy has been certified by a very prominent genealogist who says that I meet and far exceed the legal standard for kinship. And that's only through the efforts of my mom, her grandfather, and the children of Papa Renty. The fact that I was the one to piece this puzzle together, in my mind, gives me the right to speak on behalf of Papa Renty. Mm-hmm.
Before we head to break, I wanted to go back to Marion Moore again, the great-great-great-granddaughter of Louis Agassiz, this Harvard professor who commissioned these images of Renty and Delia back in 1850. This week, the Harvard Crimson reported, Marion, that the Cambridge City Council voted to begin the process of renaming the city's Agassiz neighborhood, named after your great-great-great-grandfather, Louis Agassiz, because of the fact that he, again, was a proponent of this racist theory. What is your reaction to that news?
It's really a great question because, you know, the little girl in me that was proud of my great-great-great-grandfather was like, aw, you know. but the woman that is talking to you today is very supportive of that because it feels like part of the movement that Tammy has really, you know, accelerated with her devotion to the legacy of her ancestor, you know, to reckon with what the other part of his work was. So however we can get more consciousness about that, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I want to thank you, Marion Moore, for joining us today here on Where We Live. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, in studio with me is Tamara Lanier, a Norwich, Connecticut resident who is suing Harvard University over images of two enslaved individuals taken in 1850, Renty and Delia. Tamara Lanier says that her research proves that these two individuals are her descendants. Coming up after the break, we want to expand this conversation, and we're going to talk to a Georgetown professor of history about how universities, including Georgetown, are now acknowledging their legacies to slavery. And we're going to get her thoughts and what she thinks Harvard University should do about, again, these daguerreotypes that they possess of Renty and Delia. You can join us, too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. We've been talking with Norwich, Connecticut resident Tamara Lanier, who's suing Harvard University for its possession of old photographs known as daguerreotypes taken in 1850 of two enslaved people who Lanier says are her relatives. They were commissioned by Harvard professor Louis Agassiz, who advanced a white supremacist theory that claimed blacks were inferior to whites. Now, how should universities acknowledge their legacies to slavery? Joining us now via phone is Marcia Chatlin, professor of history and African American studies at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Marcia, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
So I wanted to talk first about maybe reminding our listeners about how American universities profited from slavery. What are some examples?
Well, when we think about universities and slavery, sometimes our default position is thinking about the enslaved people who helped build the physical buildings. But I think it's also important for us to understand that a lot of the wealth that went into building and sustaining colleges and universities across the country was wealth that was made from the slave trade and the industries that depended on slave labor. In addition to that, I think this case at Harvard with Louis Agassiz's photographs also highlight the ways that universities were also places in which the ideology of white supremacy was not only validated, but it was taught to people who went out and led in various industries.
I'm speaking with you again. You're a historian at Georgetown. Georgetown itself has been acknowledging its connections to slavery. There was this great New York Times story about how Georgetown sold 272 slaves as a fundraiser to avoid bankruptcy. I believe you now sit on a committee think about ways to talk about Georgetown's history and acknowledging this past. Can you tell me about those efforts?
Yeah, so I was a member of the Working Group on Slavery, Memory, and Reconciliation, and we were charged with really thinking about how the history of Georgetown slaveholding can animate not only what people know about Georgetown, but how we proceed in the future. And through various initiatives, we've been able to raise consciousness on our campus. And I think what's been more gratifying from my perspective is that these efforts in many ways helped the university also confront the descendants of not only the 1838 sale, but the long history of slaveholding that was at the center of Georgetown University.
When we connect this again to this conversation we're having here with Connecticut resident Tamara Lanier, who believes that the family of the descendants of Renty and Delia should be able to possess these photos and not Harvard University. Harvard University believes they are, or it is, an ethical steward of these photographs. And so how should, in your opinion, Harvard handle this situation? Again, they're being sued by Tamara Lanier for these daguerreotypes.
Yeah, and I really support her lawsuit because I think that at the end of the day, we don't make progress if we continue to have this viewpoint that everything a university does is positive, good, or benevolent for the greater good. It's not true. Universities, like other institutions, can do incredible things, but they also have to be held accountable because it isn't just that one individual on their faculty was a bad actor and had all of these negative ramifications intellectually. It's the fact that the possession of those photographs and the inclusion of this person on the faculty is also what helped build Harvard's prestige and reputation. And I think that they have to account for it. And so I'm really excited to see these innovative approaches to pushing back against universities because it opens up a lot of deep, complex questions that would otherwise be ignored.
Mm. So you're saying people like Tamara Lanier suing Harvard University is a way to bring awareness and to force a university to think about its history?
100%. I think that if we believe that the legacy of slavery is deeply buried and is only a matter of plantations from a bygone era, or it's simply about photographs of a different period, then we lose sight of just how nefarious and pernicious slavery was, that there are, that the legacy continues in people and individuals who are willing to push back against the power that slavery allowed for these institutions to have. And so I don't know if there is room within the law today to allow for these photographs to be returned to the descendants. But having this conversation and the conversations that will be generated because of it, I think already show the power and the importance of these actions.
Can I follow up on what you just said about you're not sure if the law really sides with people like Tamara Lanier when they're challenging universities' possession or ownership of these items? I believe the current Harvard professor, Bacow, if I'm saying his last name correctly, also has quoted as saying the law is on Harvard's side. So can you tell us more about that?
Well, I mean, I think that the law is often on the side of the privileged, but there is precedent because of policy. When we think about Native American artifacts and universities and other cultural institutions having to repatriate, whether it is the bones of people who have passed or objects. So I think that there is place within the law to imagine repatriation of items. I think that it is unfortunate that the law has to be the default position and Harvard not simply being reflective and saying, you know what, perhaps there's a different way that we can engage with the family of descendants and there's a different way that we can see this as not just about intellectual property, but about doing justice. And so there are frames in which universities have to relinquish property because of how that property came into their possession. Unfortunately, the time that these photographs were taken, no laws were being violated. And I think that's probably the wall that the family, that Lanier particularly, is up against. But it doesn't mean that the claim is not valuable.
Thank you for clarifying that. You're hearing Marcia Chatlin, historian and professor of history and African American studies at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. I wanted to go back to Tamara Lanier, again, a Norwich, Connecticut resident, in studio with me. First, what's your reaction when you hear historian Marcia Chatlin agreeing with that, with your stance that these photographs should belong to you?
Well, I want to thank Marcia for her insight, and I want to add to the discussion and some of the research. I came across a recent legislative act in 2016. It's the HEAR Act, the Holocaust Expropriation Art Recovery Act, that was passed unanimously by Congress. But what it says is, it says a lot of things, but specifically for victims of the Holocaust, that they would, for these purposes, so that they could recover property appropriated because of the Holocaust, that they would toll statutes of limitations. They would charge museums with the responsibility of canvassing their inventory, looking for any property that might belong to victims of the Holocaust, and that they return it. That victims of the Holocaust could seek redress in United States courts, irrespective of where they live. These are all great things. And so when I read that, I'm thinking, but what about the victims of slavery? Can we have these kinds of protections? This is what I'm asking. These are cultural relics. These are family photos. Where is my protection? Mm-hmm. And so part of the argument argues equal protection. You know, if I were a victim of the Holocaust, I would have legislation protecting me. And so my hope is that we broaden the discussion to apply the same standards as we do to the Native American Great Protection Act, the HEAR Act, to descendants of slaves.
We just have a couple minutes left. Tamara, again, Harvard University is being sued by you. They still possess these daguerreotypes of Renty and Delia, who you say are your relatives. If a judge, a jury, would rule in your favor, what would you do with these images?
Well, it's just fortunate to have the opportunity to make that decision. And I have thought about it. I've thought about the Smithsonian. I've thought about the Afro-American Museum in D.C. There's also one coming up in some of Rinty's children's hometown of Charleston, South Carolina. And I've also been in communications with people from Africa in terms of the possibility of Rinty returning home. So I haven't decided, but, you know, it would just – I just would enjoy the privilege of making that decision. Mm.
I mentioned that your mother passed away several years ago, and that's what started you on this journey to connect yourself to Renty and Delia. What do you think she would say to you if she knew how far you've come?
I think about that often. She would be very proud. I think she it's because of her that I'm driven to see this through. It's been a long journey, a lot of setbacks, a lot of disappointments, but she and this image in front of me are my motivation. And so I may have to set it aside for a moment or two to recoup, but I'm driven to see this through to the end. And I believe that if the Civil Rights Act of 1868 and our 13th and 14th Amendment are going to be true to the paper that it's written on, that Renty and Delia will prevail.
Well, I want to thank Tamara Lanier again for coming into our studio here where we live, a Norwich, Connecticut resident who says she's a descendant of Renty and Delia, enslaved people whose images were commissioned by Harvard professor Louis Agassiz in 1850. You can see Renty and Delia on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Tamara, it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Marcia Chatlin was with us, a historian from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., she's got a new book out, Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America. Marcia, we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Today's show produced by Robin Doyen Aiken. Thanks to Carmen Baskoff and Maxine Villafong. And Ryan Karen King. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.